what would happen to her vacant throne, Damian said. We thought that the one who defeated her would take her throne by right of conquest, Kazim said.
But by the time you won the war, the Vampire Council had imploded, and there wasn't a European throne to take, I said.
We did not anticipate an American king, Jake said.
Echo says what we really didn't anticipate is that it took centuries to build the Council's power base, and we expected it to transfer seamlessly to the next ruler, the next Council,
Fortune said.
A little naive of you all, wasn't it? I asked.
Kazim gave me a sour look.
Perhaps in retrospect, Jake said, smiling, but not like he was entirely happy with it all.
Kazim, I'm sorry we got through your shields further than you wanted, or we wanted, but can you get past it to do your job here and now?
We can put out this fire tonight, Anita, but it is like a house fire when the world is about to burn.
Can you follow orders and do your job to help us save Dublin or not?
What does one city matter if you carry the seeds of the apocalypse inside you?
I'll take that as a no, I said, and looked to Jake and Fortune. All right, tell us what you've learned, because we need a plan before nightfall that doesn't need Kazim to work.
I will do my part of any plan, he said.
I shook my head. You had your chance, Kazim. You said you'd let Dublin burn, let Ireland be destroyed tonight because you're worried about a disaster that's not here yet.
You feel her power inside you. You must, he said.
Power is not destiny, Jake said.
I'm a big believer in free will, I said.
And I have seen too many centuries not to believe in fate, Kazim said.
I turned to the rest of them. Let's find Edward and get our plans off the ground without Gloomy Puss here.
I am not a puss, he said.
Fine, without Gloomy Dog here.
No, that doesn't work, does it?
Gloomy Puppy, Nathaniel offered.
Gloomy Pup,
Pride suggested.
I expected better of you, Kazim said.
Dev isn't perfect, Uncle Chaz, but he's trying. And you really are a gloomy hound and always have been.
Uncle Chaz? I asked.
When we were little, they were Uncle Jake and Uncle Chaz, Pride said.
Kazim ignored the old nickname, too angry to care, I think. Then he said,
You are right.
He turned to me.
And you are right as well. I have made the mistake of a soldier, letting the fear of defeat in war steal my courage for fighting today's battle. Thank you for reminding me that if we do not win today's battle, then we will never survive to win the war.
I was thinking more you win the war one battle at a time, but okay, let's go find Edward and get our well-armed ducks in a row.
How do you know what ducks you need, our queen? Jake asked.
We'll figure that out as we go, I said. He looked at me for a moment, then threw back his head and laughed.
Just like that.
It's Edward. It's me. It's all of you, Nolan and his people. It's the gentle folk of Ireland singing sweet songs in our ears. With all that on our side, Jake, we'll figure out which ducks we need.
Before nightfall?
Kazim asked. Yes.
There is no doubt in you, he said.
I don't have time for it. Fortune came up to me, and Dev, because he was so close, throwing an arm around us both.
We'll find gigantic carnivorous ducks, she said,
and kissed us both, one right after the other, so that I tasted the echo of his mouth on hers. Nathaniel came over and added his kisses to ours, and Damian came to kiss two out of the four of us. Kazim made an impatient sound that we were wasting time, but I've gone into a lot of fights now, and starting with a kiss beat the hell out of starting with a punch. Chapter 71 Damian gave addresses of the old lairs that his old master and cronies had used 5 years ago. Since they'd been using some of them for centuries, it was a good bet they were still using some of them. You'd expect that once we knew possible places to go, we'd suit up and bust down some doors, but it didn't work that way, in America or in Ireland. The police would be gathering information on the addresses, public records, blueprints, find out if they were owned and lived in by human beings we could verify, because some of the addresses hadn't been used by Milady and her crew in a while, like decades. He made a list of centuries-old lairs. Not because they had been recently used, but because she owned them and she gave up nothing. Some of the buildings probably didn't even exist anymore. Those would be weeded out first, and then they'd gather as much intel as possible. I'd worked with enough tactical units to know that the information gathering saved time and possibly lives later. but it was still a delay that always drove me a little crazy. It wasn't as bad this time because we didn't know which address we needed to hit, and the info would help us narrow the choices. What to do while we waited? Edward and I both had some ideas, they just weren't the same ones. If we can figure out why the holy objects didn't work at the police station and get them working before we send people into battle again, it will give us an advantage. It will give an advantage to the newbies who have never fought vamps before.
How do you know the newbies will have that much faith?
They're fresh out of the packaging when we all believe in right and wrong, and that we can save the world. Your faith is always shinier before it gets a good test run.
But not stronger, he said.
The comment surprised me from Edward, but I nodded and said, No, not stronger, just newer.
Your cross didn't go off either, you know.
When no one's cross worked at the door to the station, I didn't think to draw mine. I might have, but about then he went out the door into the sunlight. I've never tried to trap a vampire between a cross's glow or burning to death in sunlight. I think I'd go for the cross first if it were me, but once it gets dark, the crosses will be the only glow they need to fear. Besides, Damien was right beside me. When some of the vampires are on our side, holy objects are a mixed blessing.
If I'd brought my flamethrower, that wouldn't be true about the glow.
You've almost burned one house down around us. It's left me not a fan of your flamethrower.
You're never going to let me forget that, are you?
Nope. I smiled when I said it, but I meant it. Edward wanted me to go off with one of my people and try to heal my wounds with a little sexual healing before I did anything else.
It will take time for Pearson to get permission for you to do a demonstration to peacekeepers he doesn't have under his direct charge.
How much time? I asked.
Make it a quickie. 30 minutes or so. They won't have everything organized before that.
I knew there was a reason we were friends. I like a man who considers 30 minutes a quickie. He grinned.
20 minutes in a pinch, but you're not just having sex. You're trying to heal a wound made by something supernatural. That might take more time.
I double-checked with Pearson, but Edward was right. It was going to take time to get all the Gerda's ducks in a row. Apparently someone had recorded us shooting the burned vampire to pieces in the street with a smartphone. It was all over the internet, and it looked pretty brutal, so the upper management of the local constabulary wasn't sure how much more help they wanted from the Americans. When I pointed out that they'd probably want the Americans on their side come nightfall, he'd said,
No one making this decision saw the vampires in person today. None of them have even walked into a crime scene or seen a victim in person. They don't want to believe what's happening to our city.
They better believe and fast, Pearson, because we all need to make plans to try to keep Dublin from going up in blood and vampires tonight.
I know that, Blake, but I'm not the one ultimately in charge.
Are you actually saying that the powers that be may send me and my people home tonight, rather than let us stay and help you fight?
It's not a fight, Blake. It's a crime to solve.
We know who's behind it, Pearson. We just need to find her and make sure she can't do this again.
We only have your vampire's word that it's his old master, Blake. We have no proof that we can take into court. We can't arrest her unless we catch her hurting people personally.
Are you honestly saying that with Flannery and his people telling you the same thing that Damien and I are telling you, that it's not enough to convince your boss's boss that we just need to find her before nightfall and end her ass?
They aren't comfortable with the American solution.
American solution? Shit, Pearson, you saw what just one vampire did to your peacekeepers today. What do you think is going to happen when night falls and she can control that many vampires?
I can't prove that will happen, Blake, and neither can you.
If they wait until tonight to plan a response, it's going to be a bloodbath. You know that.
I have been very clear about what I believe is happening and will happen tonight, but you have to understand we have never had vampires here. We're Irish. We can usually make friends with any supernatural element that comes our way.
Yeah, just a magical minority. I get it, but Pearson, the Fae are scared too. They don't know what's happening to Dublin, and they're worried it's going to spread from here to other cities.
The gentlefolk are part of the discussion with my superiors.
And they still won't budge?
They're budging, but not as fast as you are wanting.
It's not what I want, Pearson, it's what's needed.
Perhaps. But I have to go through channels, Blake, and if you or any of your people act without clearance from us, then your likelihood of being escorted out of Dublin and to the airport when we need you most is almost a given.
I'd like to say you're joking, but I know you're not.
We do things differently over here, Blake.
All bureaucracies are the same, Pearson. We've just had longer to deal with the problem in my country.
No, Blake. One of the reasons that we preferred Forrester to you is that even your own FBI hasn't invited you to lecture and help train their agents. Even your own countrymen consider you more likely to resort to violence. Plus, you are a beautiful woman who is completely comfortable with violence. That unnerves some people almost more than the necromancy.
Are you saying this comes down to some kind of weird sexism?
Publicly, I will say no, but privately, a little bit.
So if I were less attractive, this would go over better?
Even taller and more physically formidable would help. But you're this petite, attractive woman, and it seems to bother some of my superiors that you're so comfortable with violence.
That is ridiculous, I said.
A little bit, he said.
I can't grow taller in the next few hours, Pearson.
I know that.
Is there anything I can do to help them like me and my people better?
Stay out of trouble. And by trouble, I mean don't shoot anyone. Don't do anything violent until I've talked them through this.
And if I'm attacked, can I defend myself?
Of course you can defend yourself. But if you are attacked, making sure there are witnesses to them throwing the first punch, so to speak, would be helpful.
So you're saying that even if I defend myself, any violence will count against me? Us?
Just don't shoot anyone, please.
I really don't want to get close enough to use a blade, Pearson. That's a good way to get even more hurt than I am.
No, Blake, no blades either.
Don't shoot anyone. Don't cut anyone with a knife. These are vampires, Pearson. What am I supposed to do, arm wrestle them?
I know this sounds unreasonable to you, Blake.
Damn straight it does.
But we don't resort to guns as soon as you do in your country. We call ourselves peacekeepers for a reason, because we see keeping the peace as our primary task.
If you and your superiors don't have a battle plan before dark tonight, there won't be any peace in Dublin. As soon as Flannery's friend's magic fades enough, the wicked bitch of Ireland is going to call all her vampires to her. She has created an army here, don't you understand that?
We're hoping that most of the vampires are in the hospitals currently under sedation.
The drugs won't keep them unconscious once night falls, I said.
The doctors think differently, he said.
Because they think the vampires are people with a disease, and they aren't.
Vampirism is a disease, just like cancer, he said.
Yes, but cancer patients don't crave human blood or become stronger and faster. They can't capture people with their gaze and force them to turn on their own people.
The doctors in charge of the patients think the drugs will keep them comatose tonight.
Fine. But what about the other vampires in the city?
We're hoping that most of them are either dead or in the hospital wards.
Oh my God. Are you telling me that you really believe that we have most of the vampires in the city contained?
He cleared his throat and said, That is the prevailing theory.
Theories are great in the laboratory or in the boardroom, but out on the streets, your theory is going to meet reality tonight.
If you don't shoot or stab anyone between now and nightfall, I may be able to get them to agree to you and your people being part of the watch groups that will be patrolling the city.
If we help patrol the city, will we be cleared to shoot in self-defense at least?
I won't ask that question, and neither should you, Blake.
Why not?
Because sometimes it's better to beg forgiveness than ask permission and be denied.
Jesus, Pearson. You're setting your fellow Gerda up to be slaughtered.
I'm doing the best I can. Just stay out of trouble for a few hours. We have time before dark if nothing else goes wrong and ends up on YouTube.
We have no control over who has a phone and records what, I said.
Stay out of sight then. Just until I can talk them through this, and then you can show us how a holy item is supposed to work.
Fine, I said, and hung up because I didn't trust myself to say more. Apparently, I had time for more than just a quickie. Chapter 72. My first choice would have been Nathaniel, or Nathaniel and Damien, but I'd fed the ardour on them recently and I needed to give them another day of rest. Maybe more now that Nathaniel had donated blood to multiple vampires today. I actually asked Dev to go with me, but Jake stepped in saying, He has donated much blood today and should rest before he feeds anyone else again. Dev had protested, but in the end we'd listened to the older and more experienced voice, which left me with a quandary. Fortune had also donated to multiple vampires. Magda was 30 minutes or more away with traffic. And honestly, girl-on-girl sex took longer because it was girl foreplay for two instead of just one. Yes, some men needed more foreplay than others, and a lot more men enjoy foreplay than will admit it. But I was out of women and almost out of men. Just when you think you've overpacked, you realize you didn't bring enough of something. I'd done my best to get both Ethan and Domino off my list of lovers, because they both wanted more emotional commitment than I could offer. I was so over my limit for emotional caretaking, but I needed to use the only healing ability I had. which, like so many of the abilities I had inherited, was sexual in nature. As Dev had said earlier, lust was better than fear or death or violence, and I could feed off anger, but I couldn't heal with anger, and that was what I needed.
You could look a little less unhappy about this,
Domino said. I'm sorry, really, I said, and I included Ethan in the apology. It's just that I keep trying to trim my list of lovers and make a big deal out of the trimming, and now here we are again. Ethan smiled. Your dance card was beyond full by the time I came into your life. I figured that out once I got to St. Louis, and yes, I was disappointed, but now I'm with Nilda, and I'm happier than I've ever been. That wouldn't have happened if you hadn't met me in Washington. I patted his arm. Thanks, Ethan, but will Nilda have a problem with us sleeping together again? He shook his head. She knows I'm one of your moiety bet, and to a member of the Harlequin, that means I belong to you first and everyone else second. Good to know, I said, and turned to Domino, who was not smiling. Will Jade be okay with us doing this?
Jade wants to fuck you too, Anita. She'll be fine.
That made me frown, because I'd just gotten free of a relationship with Jade that had been unsatisfactory on my part and frustrating for her. I didn't want to get dragged back into it when we got back home.
Is it really that bad a choice, the two of us?
Domino asked. I smiled but looked down because I knew it wasn't going to make it all the way up into my eyes.
No, of course. You are both lovely in bed.
Lovely sounds like girl speak for good but not great, he said.
Why are you making this difficult? I asked.
Because if I'm going to get a chance to have sex with you again, I want you to treat it less like a chore you have to do and more like something fun. I know you're only doing it to try to heal, but still, sex is supposed to be fun, Anita.
That made me smile all the way up, so I let him see it. Thanks for the reminder, because you're right. I was treating it like a chore, and I'm sorry for that. I'm just worried about what the Irish police are going to do, or what they're going to allow us to do tonight. Edward said,
Nolan and I will help Pearson persuade the upper management.
I hate it when police are run like a corporation. It just doesn't work that way, I said.
That's still how most of them are run, especially in the larger cities.
It still doesn't make it right, I said. He agreed with me, but sent me off with the two were-tigers, saying,
Have fun.
I looked at the two men who were waiting for me a little down the hallway. They were almost the same height, just under 6 feet. Domino's shoulders were broader, and he just bulked up a little more when he worked out. Ethan was even more slender than when I'd met him, honed down from the workouts and training that our guards did. Both of them were in better shape than when I found them. Domino had been muscle for the mobster who was also Master Vamp of Las Vegas. Being mob muscle didn't come with a set exercise routine. Ethan had been a bodyguard for the Queen of the Red Tiger Clan. I looked at him, realizing just how much thinner he was now, and he'd been thin to begin with. Either he wasn't eating enough or he'd leaned down through all the exercise with us. Once I got him out of his clothes, either he'd have more visible muscle, or he'd have less muscle mass in general from poor nutrition. Either way, once we got to our hotel room, I'd find out. Chapter 73. I didn't find out if Ethan was starving himself or had just carved himself down to lean muscle, because Domino won the toss, or rather threw down with,
I am more dominant than you are, so unless you want to fight about it, which Ethan didn't.
It was sort of my fault, because I was having trouble choosing, and had made some noise about why not make it a threesome. Neither of them wanted to do that, but they took my suggestion as meaning I had no preference between the two of them, so they decided for me. Normally, I might not have been okay with that, but there was nothing normal about our trip to Ireland. My arm was aching by the time we walked to the hotel, so I was good with someone else taking initiative. Ethan went into the connecting room and shut the door between us. I sat down on the edge of the king-size bed, my arm in the sling, and hugged it a little closer to me, carefully.
How much pain are you in?
Domino asked.
Enough.
I want this healed. He came to stand near me.
I mean, are you in so much pain that it's going to interfere with the sex?
My concentration may not be what it's supposed to be, I said. He knelt in front of me. I was suddenly looking into those red and orange eyes. They so looked like tiger's eyes in his human face, but strangers would ask where he got the cool contacts. Very few people saw the reality of him. I wasn't sure if they lied to themselves, or if other people were just that blind to anything outside the ordinary. Micah's leopard eyes didn't have clean circles of color between his gold and yellow. It was more an intermingling of the two colors, but Domino's red and orange were separate. Not perfect circles, but the imperfection of it made the two colors bleed over just a little here and there, so the illusion was less fire and more water, as if his eyes held both heat and cool, flame and liquid. I touched his face, laying my fingers beside those eyes and tracing downward along his cheek to find the softness of his lips with just the tips of my fingers. The movement made him close his eyes for a moment and let his breath out in a long sigh that seemed to hold months of stress and tension, just blown away with one breath. I caressed his hair next, playing with the scattering of white curls as if someone had spilled white rose petals into all that raven black hair. He was watching me now, the tiger eyes full of so many emotions that no real tiger would ever feel, because they couldn't possibly overcomplicate their lives as much as humans did. He touched my face, and his hand was big enough to cup the entire side of mine, so that I laid my cheek in his hand as if it were a pillow, and let myself relax into the nearly fevered warmth of his skin. I said out loud, "So warm."
"I have warmer places on my body."
"Show me," I said. Chapter 74. Once he was nude, I could see the play of new muscles under his skin. He was beginning to bulk up, and I could trace the shadow lines of a six-pack across his stomach, just hidden below a layer of warm, soft, kissable skin. He was only a few pounds from having that cut fierceness that graced the cover of so many magazines, but he looked beautiful just as he was. And I knew through dating so many dancers and weightlifters that a true six-pack is either a very clean diet or genetic luck, or a combination. We all hit the gym to stay in shape for our jobs, whether it was stripping on stage, performing in ballet, fighting monsters, or guarding other people's bodies. But for that fitness model look, you had to spend almost more time in the gym than with the people you loved, and it just wasn't worth it to me. Domino had to help me off with my clothes. Getting the sling off had been almost the most painful part. First, it was straightening the arm, which hurt, and then letting the arm hang hurt. We ended up putting the sling back on once I was nude. That way I wasn't wincing every time I moved. "Why does this hurt so much?"
"You had a piece of someone driven into your arm so deep that you almost had to have surgery to have it removed," he said.
"Oh," I said. And after that, I stopped asking stupid questions, or tried to. I sometimes say what I'm thinking too much when foreplay is just starting. I did my best not to ask anything else that obvious. Either I managed it, or Domino didn't care enough to comment. He just ran those warm hands over my body. And he was right. Other parts of him were even warmer. I tried oral sex on him in one of my two favorite positions, with him lying flat on the bed and me kneeling over him, but I couldn't bear for my arm to hang at the angle I needed. I straightened up with him firmer than when I'd started, but not to my usual level of happy. I knelt beside him and said, "I'm sorry my arm is in the way."
"I would love for you to go down on me later when you're feeling better, but I understand that you're hurting. Let's fix that."
"Sounds good. How?" I was cradling my arm now. It wasn't aching anymore, it was just hurting. Waves of pain were radiating from my arm, up my shoulder, down the side of my body. It was not as bad as when they'd cleaned and treated the wound, but it was bad enough that I was beginning to wonder how I was going to get past it for sex. I liked a little pain with my sex sometimes, but this was not the right kind of pain. This just fucking hurt.
"I can feel the echo of how much you're hurting," he said.
"I'm sorry for that," I said. He touched my good arm.
"You don't have to be. It's part of my job as your beast half to feel what you're feeling and help you heal it."
"Domino, I'm not sure if I can do this, hurting this much."
"You've just gotten spoiled sharing our healing abilities," he said,
smiling and trying to make light of it. "Yes, I have gotten spoiled. I'd forgotten what a bitch it was to get hurt during an investigation and still have to keep going."
"I have an idea," he said.
"I'm all ears." He looked me up and down, lingering on my breasts.
I wouldn't say that,
he said, and he touched where he'd looked the longest, and it felt nice to have him caress my breasts, but the pain overwhelmed it. He finally propped pillows up against the headboard and helped me recline with pillows, helping to hold my arm in place, so I didn't keep having to use my good arm to hold it. He started caressing my thighs and passing that warm hand over the front of my body. He didn't try to go for the gold, didn't try to play with me, but just kept petting me with those big, warm hands of his, and I started to relax into the pillows and his touch. He finally started touching more to the point, helping me spread my legs wider so he could lie between them, tracing the edges of me, petting me and finally laying one big hand over the front of me, so that he cupped all of me in the fevered warmth of his hand, pressing the palm of it against me, so that it was almost like being held, but just there. It was so gentle, and I felt myself growing wet and tension trying to leave. I wanted what went with that tenderness. He began to play with me, tracing over that sweet spot that had swollen at all that gentle foreplay. I couldn't have handled rough tonight. Domino ran his fingers over and around, and then over, caressing, teasing, until my breath came faster and my body felt eager for more. I expected the orgasm to come, but I stayed on that edge. The pain wouldn't let me release myself to the pleasure. It feels good, I said in a breathless voice.
But you're not going to come, are you?
The pain keeps getting in the way. I looked down at him lying between my legs, his hand on my thigh now. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize, Anita. We've all been hurt.
But you can shift and heal.
Not everything,
he said. He kissed my thigh and then again a little higher up. I couldn't bear it if you went down on me and I couldn't go. That would almost be too much frustration for me. He rose up from kissing his way down my thigh.
You turning down oral sex means you're hurting even more than you're letting me feel.
One of us hurting this much is enough. He laid his cheek on my thigh and gazed up at me with those startling eyes of his. Maybe if he'd been a more consistent lover for me, I would have gotten used to them by now. But we'd never made a habit of each other, so every time I looked into his eyes like this, the alien beauty of them in his face thrilled through me. If I'd been a different kind of person, it would have thrilled and frightened me, because the eyes screamed different, not one of us, not like me, so hard. But differences weren't bad to me, so the thrill turned to seeing it as beautiful like a rare orchid, or like a painting that was all bold colors and movement, so that even if you didn't know what the artist meant, you still liked the energy and color of the art.
There, that's better,
he said, and he was right. Something about staring into his eyes had calmed me, and once I calmed down, the arm didn't hurt so much. I've lost the knack of coping with injuries like this. I'm like a pain wimp now. He laughed softly.
You will never be a wimp about anything, Anita. But you are out of practice coping with injuries.
It hurt more because I wasn't expecting it to hurt this much.
And now?
He asked. Better, as long as I don't abuse it too much.
I think we can find something to do that won't abuse your arm.
He kissed the top of my thigh, then rubbed his cheek lower on my thigh. Whatever could you have in mind? I asked. He grinned up at me as he kissed his way lower on my thigh.
I've been practicing more since we did this last.
Have you now? He nodded, rubbing his face against the inside of my thigh as he did it. Show me what you've learned. He smiled with his lips against my thigh.
I learned part of it watching you go down on Jade with Jason's girlfriend helping.
JJ was a very good teacher, I said, and felt the heat start to rise up my face as I thought about the blonde ballerina. He gave a low chuckle that ended in a rolling bass purr. That last sound made me shiver in a good way, but it shivered the muscles where I'd been stitched up too, which wasn't nearly as fun. I'm not sure if I can translate this pain into pleasure.
You'll just have to hold still when you orgasm, he said.
I don't know if I can.
I've heard stories about you holding still when you have to for it.
I frowned at him. Who's been talking?
Hm-hm, he said, lips against my thigh. No kissing and telling.
He kissed my thigh again this time, just at the edge of that deep curve on the inside of the very upper part of the thigh. He laid the next kiss inside it, letting his breath come out warm and soft against my skin. I fought not to shiver again, or at least to keep my arms still. I sort of succeeded. He kissed my mound and blew another soft breath. It was so warm it was almost hot against my skin. It sent my breath out in a long sigh, eyes closing, and he chose that moment to lick between my legs, one quick, teasing line. It made me look at him, half laughing. The look in his eyes stole the laughter away and left me breathless, my body already tightening. Every man has that predatory look in him somewhere, but this one was coming from a pair of eyes that belonged in the striped face of a real predator. His tiger gazed up at me, and the thought of him putting his mouth on such intimate bits of my body made me shiver for more than one reason. I'd almost made peace with the fact that a little fear with my sex, a little danger with those I trusted, just flipped my switch. As he began to lick around the edges of me, careful to take his time and warm me up for what would come next, I admitted that part of the thrill was not the gentleness, but the thought that even human teeth could do damage. When you think about it, oral sex is one of the most trusting things we do with a lover. If that lover is a shapeshifter who has real fangs and claws inside him, it's even more about trust. I let myself relax into the feel of his tongue circling around the edges of me, licking in long strokes on either side, coming closer but never quite touching me where I wanted it most. I finally asked, "Please, please." He rose up enough to ask, "Please what?" But the look in his eyes let me know that he knew exactly what. But I played the game. "This all feels wonderful, but please make me come. No more prep work. No more teasing."
"It's called foreplay, Anita, not teasing."
He licked to either side, but purposely avoided the one last spot I wanted him to touch.
"Domino, you're driving me crazy. Just do it."
"You mean this?"
He licked a quick line from my opening up and barely touched the one spot I wanted him to touch the most. I laughed, half in pleasure, half exasperation.
"Domino!"
"When I make you come, I want you to say my name."
I almost said out loud that I tried not to use anyone's name, because I didn't want to cry out the wrong name. I'd done it a few times, and so far everyone had been a good sport, but it wasn't flattering to have your lover call out someone else's name in the middle of sex. It just wasn't. But as I stared down the line of my body into those flame and sunset eyes, what else could I say but yes? He brought me with his tongue, his lips, his mouth, licking and sucking over that one sweet point, and because he'd done so much foreplay, the orgasm was bigger, more all-consuming, so the orgasm washed over me in wave after wave that left me quivering and screaming, my hands trying to find something, anything to dig my nails into, to hold on to as one orgasm spilled into the next. Or maybe it was the same one over and over, like waves against the shore. It's all the same ocean, but not the same wave. I screamed his name with my head thrown back, eyes closed, his name like a frantic prayer spilling over and over from my lips.
"Domino! Domino! Domino!"
His face was suddenly above me.
"Your arm seems better."
I blinked up at him. I'd slid down the pillows and buried myself deeper into them as I thrashed around. The sling was loose around my neck because my arm wasn't in it anymore. I managed to gasp,
"Yes!"
"Good, because I want to fuck you now."
"Yes, God, yes."
He smiled, and my mind could almost process that he was on all fours above me, his arms on either side of my upper body, his knees between my legs. He was already wearing a condom like a pale shadow over the hardness of him. He leaned his lower body on top of me but kept his upper body propped above me. He tried to slide himself inside me but couldn't quite get the angle. If I could have moved, I'd have helped him, but I was still lying there boneless and floating on the afterglow of the sex we'd already had. He used his hand to guide himself inside me. I was so wet, but tight the way I got after oral sex. He was wide enough that he had to push to work himself inside me, one delicious inch at a time. I was making small, eager noises by the time he got himself as deep inside me as he could, our bodies wedded together as intimately as it was possible to be.
"Look at me, Anita," he said.
I'd been watching his body sliding inside mine, but his words made me look up. He was staring down at me.
I want you to look at me while we make love. I want you to look into my eyes the whole time.
I don't know if I can.
I want to watch your eyes while we make love. I want you to watch my eyes and not my body.
The thought of looking him in the eyes the whole time made me uncomfortable and strangely self-conscious. I might have protested, but I'd been with Jade enough to know why he might be asking this now. She saw too much eye contact during sex as aggression, and that had been with me, another woman. I couldn't imagine how much worse the issue would be between her and a man. Even in the middle of sex, Jade seemed to hide. I could understand Domino wanting someone who didn't hide. Someone who saw him and enjoyed being with him, no flinching, no punishing him for being a man. You could have sympathy for Jade's issues, but her unwillingness to work them in therapy had limited my sympathy after a while. I didn't ask if Domino was coming to the same conclusions. I just gave him what he wanted. I looked at him as his body began to work in and out of mine. He stopped moving long enough to throw enough pillows off the bed to give himself a firmer surface for his arms to push against. I stared up into eyes that reminded me of fire as he found his rhythm, a little faster now, but not as deep as he could go, seeking for that first spot close to the opening. I knew my breathing changed, but something must have shown on my face, because he smiled and kept sliding himself over and over in that hip-moving rhythm that had quickened my breathing and made me grab onto his arms where they kept his upper body propped above me. I watched the orange of his iris spread until the red was only a thin line around his pupil as his own breathing began to speed up. I could feel the weight between my legs growing and knew I was close. I told him so as I stared into his face and let him see every shade of pleasure, every small frown and smile and gasp, and I watched the same from him. It was almost too intimate, as if we were stripping each other bare in a way we'd never done before. Between one second and the other, one thrust of his body and the other, he brought me screaming wordlessly, too overwhelming for any words to hold. I spasmed with the orgasm, throwing my head back, closing my eyes.
Look at me, Anita. Look at me.
His voice was a deep growl, so bass it didn't sound like him at all anymore. I opened my eyes and looked up to find his lips half parted, his eyes almost frantic. He fought his body to keep its rhythm so I would scream my pleasure just one more time. I felt my nails dig into his arms where I was still holding on. He stared into my eyes and I stared back, and what I saw just a second before looked almost like fear, as if he were afraid to let himself release. His body shuddered above me, stumbled in that rhythm, and he cried out above me, his eyes wide and frantic as he thrust himself as deep inside me as he could get, which made me scream for him again. I felt him shudder inside me, felt him go inside me, his body pulsing with it, which made me cry out again and rake my nails down his arms. He finally closed his eyes and bowed his head over me, while his chest rose and fell as if he'd been running. There was a fine sheen of sweat down the middle of his chest. I wanted to touch his curls so close above me, but I couldn't make my arms work. I couldn't make anything work. I was just floating in the afterglow of all of it. His voice was breathing as he said, "Thank you." It took me two tries to say, "Oh, Domino." He raised his head enough to look at me. I smiled and said in a voice that was almost too breathless to work, "Domino. It was my pleasure. Oh, God, it was so my pleasure." He smiled then and started to pull himself out of me, one hand going to the condom to make sure everything stayed in place. He half collapsed beside me.
"I need to clean up."
I patted his chest sort of awkwardly because it was a bad angle for it.
"You do that. I can't move yet."
He got to his feet beside the bed, and then staggered into the wall trying to get into the bathroom. It made me laugh, and he laughed with me. Sex so good, you run into walls.
Chapter 75. I was still lying on the bed, letting my mind and newly healed body drift, when there was a forceful knock on the door. It was the sort of knock that police give, very authoritative and loud. The adrenaline rush cleared the floating happiness of afterglow. I sat up and called out, "Domino?" There was a knock at the connecting door, and Ethan said, "Coming through," and opened the door without asking. He had a gun bare in his hand, and I was okay with that. I was scrambling across the bed for the one I'd left handy on the bedside table. Once I had it in one hand, and the sheets covering my chest in the other one, I felt a little better. I always needed clothes and weapons to feel really secure. Domino came out of the bathroom, still nude, but he had a gun in his hand, which meant he'd stashed one in there somewhere and I hadn't known it. I was sort of impressed, or sad with myself.
I heard, he said.
Who is it?
Ethan asked from the open connecting door. Domino shook his head and went toward the door. Most people would have put their eye to the peephole, but he didn't. He stood to one side and about a foot from the door, as the knock sounded again, and a man's voice said,
Hotel security!
The voice had that cop sound to it. I was betting he either had been a cop, or was one earning extra money on the side.
I'm sorry. Who did you say you are?
Domino asked, though I knew he'd heard perfectly.
Hotel security. Is everything all right in there, sir?
We're fine.
Could you open the door and let us verify that everyone in the room is fine?
I'm sorry, but I'm not comfortable with opening the door,
Domino said.
Sir, if you don't open the door, we will be forced to unlock the door and enter without your permission.
The safety bolt is on. You won't get in,
Domino said.
We are just following up on a noise complaint, sir,
a second, slightly less authoritative voice said. Domino turned and looked at me, smiling in that way that men do when they're proud of the noise you've made together.
If you had a noise complaint, I'm sorry. We'll be quieter.
People said they heard a woman screaming. I'm terribly sorry, sir, but we need to verify that the woman is not in any distress.
Domino smiled broader and shook his head.
Anita, can you tell them you're not in any distress?
I held the sheet a little tighter to my chest as if I needed more cover-up just to talk through the door.
I'm sorry we were loud, but I'm fine.
I'm sorry, miss. We'd love to be able to take your word through the door, but we need to actually see you face to face,
the second male voice said. He sounded younger than the other one.
Is there a law in Ireland against loud sex?
Domino asked.
No, sir, said the voice through the door. But there is a law against domestic abuse.
If you don't open the door and let us see the lady for ourselves, we will be forced to call the Garda and report this as a potential assault.
I didn't think we were that loud, I said. Ethan said,
You are loud.
If you didn't know what we were doing, would you think I was screaming for help?
Maybe. Just a minute. We need to get some clothes on before we open the door,
Domino said, and backed away from the door. I'd have liked to say he was being paranoid, but the knock had spooked me, too. Maybe we were all just professionally paranoid.
Thank you, sir, ma'am, miss.
It was the younger security guard again. He sounded uncomfortable even through the door. It wasn't just clothes we needed. The guns and blades that we'd been wearing were in a pile on either side of the bed. We had no official status in Ireland, so without one of the Garda that knew us, or Nolan and his people with us, if we opened the door and the security people saw this many weapons, they would call the cops. We could put some of the dangerous stuff under the edge of the bed, but I didn't want to shove them too far under, because then we couldn't reach them. Or worse yet, I didn't want to spend time searching for a gun that I'd forgotten was under the bed.
I'd never done it yet, but I didn't want to break my streak.
Sir?
Ma'am?
Said the cop voice at the door.
Just tidying up,
I called out, trying to sound like a woman who had rented a hotel room with her lover and was maybe hiding bondage gear or sex toys from sight, not weapons. Nope, no weapons here. Ethan holstered the gun he'd drawn so he could help us put weapons in the closet. Domino pulled on underwear and jeans. He picked up his holster, but Ethan shook his head. I whispered to Domino,
We don't have any legal status here. Without Nolan and his crew, we're just armed strangers to these men. I don't know what we were thinking going out without Nolan or someone with credentials to vouch for us.
We couldn't bring Donnie and Griffin upstairs with us,
he said.
Still should have asked for a card or something from Nolan,
I said.
You were in pain, and we were thinking about sex,
Domino said.
Edward let us walk off alone too,
I said.
Him, I don't have an excuse for,
Domino said. Neither did I, which meant I'd be talking to him about it later. But first, another loud knock.
We've been patient, but either you open this door now or we call the police assuming that the lady in question is injured.
Domino put on a t-shirt loose over the top of his jeans and put one handgun at the back of his waistband.
It wasn't an ideal place to carry for real, no matter how many times you see it in movies, but for a few minutes to not spook hotel security, it would do. I'd started to put a robe on, but in the end, I got one of the few oversized sleep shirts that I'd packed and put it on over jeans. I could have hidden my AR-15 under it without it showing, but I settled for my EMP tucked into the holster I normally carried it in. Yay, gun belt. I had to put it a little more to the front than I normally carried it, but I wanted concealment more than I wanted a fast draw. We only had to show the hotel security that I wasn't a victim, and then we could call Edward or any of our people still at the police station and get an escort back there. The fact that Domino and I had both taken the time to arm ourselves before we opened the door said we were indeed paranoid. The last knock shook the door.
This is the last warning, sir. Open the door, or the Gerda are being called.
We're coming, I called. Ethan went back to the other room, shutting the door between. Domino and I visually checked the room one more time for weapons, and then he opened the door with his body not in line of sight from the door, and me farther behind him. I'd stopped arguing with the bodyguards when they were guarding.
Sorry, really, but the room was a mess,
Domino said in a wonderfully ordinary voice.
The two men in the doorway were both wearing dark suits and white button-up shirts, and they were shorter than Domino. The one in front was older and heavier, carrying enough around his middle that combined with the gray buzz cut of his hair, he'd need to worry about cardiac health soon. His white button-up shirt strained across his chest and stomach, showing the undershirt as an imprint because it was all too tight. The second one looked like he should have still been in high school if he'd been in the States. Baby fine white blonde hair cut short and a spattering of freckles across his cheeks made him look like an extra on a 1950s sitcom, but the black suit fit him well, and the shoulder spread looked more grown up than the face. I probably looked about the same age in the huge t-shirt and jeans, so I guess I shouldn't throw stones. And God knew what my hair looked like after sex. Yeah, the stone throwing could wait.
A voice down the hallway asked, "What's wrong?"
"Go back inside, ma'am, just a noise complaint."
"Miss, could we step inside the room so we don't attract more attention, please?" the older one asked.
I didn't see a problem with it, but the bodyguards and I had a deal. I would please remember to let them do their job. So I said, "Domino?"
"Sure," he said and stepped back,
keeping me behind him as they came through the door. Once we were all in the room, it seemed a lot smaller.
"Miss, please step out where we can get a better look at you," the older one asked.
It was reasonable since the lights were dim in the room, so I stepped out from behind Domino. I fought the urge to touch my hair. If I'd been that worried about it, I should have looked in a mirror before we opened the door. He arched an eyebrow that was still black like his hair had once been. The young one gave me wide, dark eyes. Apparently I wasn't meeting expectations for him either.
"Were you fighting?" the older one asked.
"No," Domino said. "We were..."
"I didn't ask you, I asked her,"
he said, and even with the Irish accent, it was still a cop voice, abrupt and cutting across any nonsense. Domino didn't argue, just stepped a little back so I was more to the front.
"No, we weren't fighting," I said. "We had reports of a woman screaming, miss. If you weren't fighting, what were you doing?"
I could have been coy, but I wasn't good at it, so I decided to try the absolute truth. "We were having sex." He looked startled instead of cynical for the first time. His sidekick looked at the floor as if he suddenly didn't want to look at me or Domino. I don't think they'd expected me to just admit it.
"And that's your story?" the older guy asked.
"It's the truth," I said. Domino held his arms out so they could see the bloody scratches on them.
"The sex got a little rough, but it wasn't my girlfriend who got hurt."
I blushed. Didn't mean to, but it helped our story, so it was a well-timed blush. "Sorry about that, Dom."
"Really?"
"I'm not complaining, Anita. Just explaining to the nice hotel security."
We shared one of those couple smiles. One that was actually not real for us, but we both played it for real. I realized that I'd gotten better at undercover work over the years. I'd never be great at it, but I was improving. The older security person was looking from one to the other of us as if he knew something was off, but not what. If he'd been an on-duty cop, he'd have probably found a way to check us out more, but he was hotel security, and he'd done his job. We just needed to keep looking pleasant until he left. The younger guy was so embarrassed that he still couldn't look at either of us.
With everything people do in hotel rooms, I wasn't sure he had the nerves for the job.
Then he looked up, and there was something in his eyes that didn't match embarrassment and made him look older.
The older guy said, "Well, thank you for letting us in your room, and just keep the noise level down."
He started to turn for the door, and his fist lashed out at me as he moved so that it was just a continuation of the movement. I managed to avoid being hit, but the other fist was swinging back at me. The young one had rushed Domino, and we were both suddenly too busy avoiding getting hit to go for the only guns we had within reach.
Chapter 76.
They were moving in a blur of speed. All I could think of was Magda in the hallway with Mort. I remembered what he'd said. Don't try to see it, just feel it. I was faster than human, faster even than Mort, but I wasn't as fast as the big fists that were flying at me. I managed to avoid the blur of his big fists and blocked a few, but it was a waiting game. Either I was going to find an opening and cripple him, or he'd get through my guard and that would be it. I didn't have time to look for Domino or wonder where Ethan was, because it was everything I could do just to keep ahead of the fight I was in. I could hear the noises and got the sense of the fight that Domino was having in his part of the room, but that was it. And then there was a sharp pain in my chest. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't raise my arms. I couldn't. A fist connected with the side of my face. The next thing I knew, I was on the floor looking up with the big guy sitting across my waist. I wasn't completely passed out, but I was close and I couldn't catch my breath. Why did my chest hurt? I was stunned from the blow to my face, which made some things feel distant. But the pain in my chest and the fact that I couldn't catch my breath, that wasn't from this fight. I didn't see the door to the connecting room open, but I saw him look up, saw his eyes react, and then his hand moved. I got a glimpse of a silver blur and thought, knife. It felt like my right shoulder had been hit by a baseball bat and my arm went numb, but I was already numb and distant from the head blow. What was happening to me? I saw the younger guy go past toward the door behind me. I wanted to look for Domino and Ethan, but I still couldn't move enough. It would pass. I knew it would pass. But would it pass in time?
Don't kill that one, the older guy said. She's having trouble breathing.
He didn't sound Irish at all now. More Ukrainian or maybe Russian. Something. I heard the sounds of fighting and another sound that was wet and not good. Someone was hurt bad. What did he mean, don't kill that one? Why had the young one been able to just walk away from Domino? I heard sounds of struggle behind me. I still couldn't catch my breath. My chest felt like he was sitting on it instead of my waist. There were bad sounds coming from the other side of the room where Domino had been. I could move now, I was pretty sure, but if I turned to look at Domino or Ethan, then the man on top of me would know I could move. I wanted to use that one chance to try to save us, not just look around. Fuck. The wet, bubbling sounds in the other part of the room sounded more frantic. I sort of knew what they meant, but I didn't want to think it all the way through. Not yet. I started gasping for air. Couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe. Couldn't...
Take that thing out of him before you kill her, too, the older guy said.
I had to look now, but I knew. He was my animal to call, one of my moiety bet. He gave me some of his healing, speed, strength, stamina, and I gave him more power. But there were downsides. My chest felt like it was collapsing. I was struggling to breathe and it fucking hurt to try. I had to see. I turned my head while I gasped like I was suffocating. Domino was pinned to the closet door with what looked like a sword hilt sticking out of his chest. Blood was bubbling out of his mouth. He coughed on it, choked on it. I had a shadow of the pain he was experiencing in the frantic struggle to breathe. Drowning in your own blood while your lungs collapse and your body keeps trying to breathe because your body keeps trying to work, even when it's too broken to ever work again. I watched Domino struggle for breath, and I knew no matter how much pain I was enduring, it wasn't as bad as what he was feeling. He looked at me with those fire-colored eyes, and what I saw in them was failure. Drowning in his own blood, and all he was thinking was that he'd failed me. I did not want that to be his last thought. I tried to tell him with my eyes that he hadn't failed me. I couldn't speak, and I didn't want to try to talk to him mind to mind. I was afraid it would make everything worse. The blonde stood in front of him, wrapped one hand around the hilt and braced the other against Domino's chest. He pushed as he pulled on the hilt, and just that extra pressure on his chest made us both start to choke, our bodies shaking and starting to convulse. The man sitting on me tried to hold me down and keep me from hurting myself, I think.
"Get it out of him now!" "It's stuck on a bone or something,"
the other one growled.
"If she dies..."
The blonde tore it out of Domino's chest, blood gushing around it as his body fell to the floor. It bowed my spine, made me try to breathe and not be able to. And then suddenly, I could breathe. My chest still ached, but it wasn't a sharp pain anymore. I breathed, and it hurt to do it, but I could do it. Shallow breaths hurt, but I tried a deeper breath, and it wasn't painful. Another one, and it was better. Other things were better, too. I thought of Nathaniel and knew he was standing with Damien beside him, and Dev was there, too. I could feel them now, and they could feel me. They knew at least some of what was happening to me now. I was afraid to open up the link as completely as I could because I didn't want the shapeshifter who was touching me to sense what I was doing. The shapeshifter in question said, "That's it. Calm, even breaths. You'll be all right." I didn't want him to comfort me. I didn't want him being nice even when I knew it was a means to an end. For some reason, they didn't want me dead, so he'd work to keep me alive. But that was the only reason I wasn't bleeding out on the floor with Domino. I turned to look at him. He wasn't moving at all now. He just lay there on his side, but he'd fallen at an odd angle, unable to cushion or direct it. His neck was hyperextended, which would make breathing even harder. Or maybe easier, I didn't know anymore. But I could see his face. See his eyes too wide as he struggled to breathe, that awful wet sound coming from his chest or his throat. Blood coated his chin and mouth. I could still taste his mouth on mine. He shook or shivered. Another gout of blood spilled out of his mouth and the horrible, wet, rattling breathing stopped. I saw his eyes go, watched him dying inches from me. I screamed. I screamed for help. I screamed because there was nothing else I could do. The man on top of me popped me in the side of the face the way you hit a cat that was chewing something, not to hurt, just to startle. It made me look away from Domino to him.
"No screaming," he said,
and took a syringe out of his jacket pocket. He removed the plastic that covered the needle. "After the screaming she already did, they'll just think it's more sex," the other one said. I didn't look at him but kept my eyes on the man with the needle. I did not want to let him give me whatever was in the syringe. I didn't even have to know what it was to know that much. I must have telegraphed something because when I tried to hit him, he blocked me with his arm and settled his weight more solidly on my waist. He had to weigh over 200, maybe closer to 3. I was pinned unless I moved him. All I could do was try to struggle enough to keep him from using the needle. I'd alerted Nathaniel and the others. They'd tell Edward and Nolan and the other police. They knew what rooms we were in. If I could delay long enough, maybe help would come. I still didn't know what they'd done to Ethan other than that he wasn't supposed to be dead. I wanted to look behind me and see for myself, but the man sitting heavy on my waist leaned down toward me with the needle. I put my arms up the way you did when you sparred, except my arms were probably his target, so it was hard to know what part of me to protect.
"I promise you the drugs will just knock you out, nothing else."
"Your word of honor?" I asked. He looked a little surprised and then said,
"Yes."
For me to take your word, you'd have to be from a century where that really mattered, and this is not that century.
"My original century was, Miss Blake. I give you my word of honor that this will only make you sleep."
"I believe you," I said.
"Then put down your arms and let me give you the shot."
"Nope. I don't want to be unconscious."
"We can hit you until you're unconscious," the younger one said.
"You don't want to kill me, and hitting someone repeatedly in the head until they're unconscious is a good way to do that by accident." "But I do want to kill you. I want to kill you so very much," he said, as he walked closer to us so I could look up at both of them. "But you won't. At least not here and now."
"And why won't I?"
because someone else wants me alive, and that someone has enough power over you to make your friend afraid of me dying here and now.
You gave away too much, he said to his friend. You shouldn't have used the weapon on one of her moiety bit. It could have killed her. He was better than I thought he would be, and the other one was coming through the door. So you admit that you couldn't take him without resorting to a magical weapon,
the one sitting on me said, and there was derision in his voice. I'd thought they were partners, but was beginning to think they didn't really like each other. It didn't mean that they weren't work partners, but it did mean that they weren't a completely united front. Division in the ranks always gave opportunity to find people you could turn. Traitor was only a bad word if they were betraying you. If they were helping you betray the other side, traitor could be a very good word. The young-looking one snarled at his friend, an edge of growl in it that looked too deep to come from